Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Sandile Swan is a political analyst. He's spoken to us numerous times before. Is the ANC ready for the polls? Will they ever be? Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Howard, and to your listeners.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about it earlier this morning, and the DA has been campaigning for a while already. We've seen them a lot on social media, almost as though they kind of ignored what was going to be happening or might happen in terms of delay. The ANC seemed to be counting on a delay of the elections and now need to get their act together. That's my impression, but I'm no expert on this. What's your thoughts?
Yes, I think that there are other factors. Now that you've started the comparison with the DA, for instance, you'll remember that the DA said that they were ready with their list for this election, the candidate list, more than 10,000 candidates. In April, March, they were ready with it. On the 23rd of August, on the due date, the ANC was not ready with it. And that is not necessarily just a function of not anticipating the correct date of the elections, but it is a function of inherent disorganization within the African National Congress itself. What has come to be known as factional battles and the boundaries of these factions are not clear. I mean, they are shifting boundaries. A person is in this faction today and in another faction tomorrow. Those battles have continued. The insurrection has happened, from within the ANC. And right now, a very deep, financial crisis has also hit the ANC. So the ANC right now is not ready in its most potent weapon in elections, which is unity. When the ANC is united and agreed on a candidate's list, as we saw in Tshwane in 2016, once that candidate list is not agreed, the ANC falls victim to the competing opposition parties. And that is one area. They don't have the money for the campaign. If we want to talk about readiness, they just don't have the money for the campaign. Two, they are disunited for the time being. We don't know if in the next 49 days they'll get better. But for the time being, they are disunited. So I'll maybe stop there for now.
Yeah, that is interesting because we are seeing this desperate attempt. And in fact, I keep thinking, and I can't really get my head around the president allowing, well, there were some reports over the weekend that Arthur Fraser came to him and he accepted the medical parole of former President Jacob Zuma. If that's true, what's being reported in the paper, that's very perplexing. But then maybe it's not so perplexing if we look at it through the prism that you're speaking about, which is really trying to find unity within the party, because if they don't find it, they are going to get a real hiding in the elections.
Yes, you must remember that, and the unity of the ANC is a layered process, and you are correct in saying whatever Arthur Fraser, the public claims to have done, it was done by the ANC, NEC. It was done by the cabinet of the African National Congress in the executive arm of government. So there's no such thing that Dr. Fraser went and did something on his own without the knowledge of the elders of the African National Congress. So where that takes us to is that there is an understanding that the ANC has got a criminal history, which will cause some of them to be imprisoned, etc., etc. And at the same time, it wants to present itself as a modern party that is rooted in good governance. But in the process of that, it has got to limit its injuries and limit really the damage to the largest number of ANC elders. So the pardonment of, if you like, of Jacob Zuma, the parole of Jacob Zuma must be located within those two movements. One movement is to say, let's become a modern political party that is based on good governance, whilst at the same time limiting the damage that can be done by mass arrest of the elders of the African National Congress.
I mean, given the fact that they haven't even been able to pay salaries, it's the ANC is very, very clearly, you spoke about, disorganized. I mean, that is the ultimate.
It's actually very deep, and some of the opposition parties have understood the issue quite correctly. The issue, which SCOPA, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts in Parliament, has raised sharply before, to many people who are involved in this political space, which is that if you are the one who is in government, no matter what your capacity is, you must be the first one to demonstrate that you obey the law. So there must be, when you are audited or examined in some way, there must be no finding that you disobeyed the law. The ANC, we believe, owes SARS 100 million rands in its debts. The other 100 million, we don't know who is owed that to other 100 million because their debt is around 200 million. They owe the UIF, which if you are an employer, you must pay the UIF. You must pay as you earn. And you must pay the actual salaries because you have an obligation as an employer at month end or weekly, whatever the case is, pay the salaries. So they violated a number of laws as the ruling party in power today, showing that the disobedience of laws in South Africa is not isolated just to some private individuals. It is orchestrated and practiced from the highest levels of power, more especially in the African National Congress.
It's just incredible. So what happens now? I mean, given the fact that as you said, there's a shortage of funding towards campaigning, there is definitely discord and disunity there. How does the ANC possibly hope to retain any form of local governance?
You've got to also go back in history, mm-hmm. because I think the ANC is being forced by physical circumstances to go back into its own history. Before 1994, which is not long ago, the people in the UDF, which is what the ANC was represented by in South Africa, and then the ANC itself, did not have these billions of rands and hundreds of millions of rands. Yet they were able to run full campaigns across the country. From door to door, everywhere, they kept the country on its toes. They were able to move the country with a fraction, maybe less than 2% of the budget of the ANC that it has today. Some of those people are still alive. Some are still involved in the ANC. And they have to be able to say, actually, you can do more with a fraction of the budget. This largesse of people earning salaries of millions, working at Luthuli House, earning in millions. And everything has been largesse. It has been just extravagant splashing of money, a reckless display of wealth and opulence. That has got to stop. You've got to be able to understand that you can go in a very humble vehicle, park at the street corner, and walk door to door with your own 2 feet, with a scaffolding, and so on, and get the work done. So they've got to go back to the basics and do the humble work of mobilizing communities in the true sense, and get rid of all these hungry multimillionaires who pretend to be revolutionaries and activists within the African National Congress.
Going to be a very, very interesting period ahead. Do you think it'll be peaceful?
Yes, I don't have any concerns about violence in the elections.
Good.
We've heard, by the way, within this COVID-19 period last year, up until the end of last year, very successful by-elections at ward level, where councillors had to be replaced. That was very successful. And coincidentally, the ANC was very successful in those elections, by the way. So the ANC, towards the end of 2020,
yes,
was actually at local government level, in terms of elections, was actually becoming quite successful.